Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C., my last show of 2016. In fact, it's my last show for a while, because following this show, I pack up my bags and I move to Richmond. Well, not permanently. I just go there to the state capitol to help pass the laws. Many of you know I am a Virginia state delegate, which some of you call state representatives. We are old-fashioned. We call ourselves delegates. But I think it's just us, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Maryland. In any case, I am elected by the good people of Alexandria, Arlington, and Fairfax County, Virginia, to represent portions of those jurisdictions in the state capitol. We meet every year for about 2 or 3 months. And this year, it will be January and February. And I'm going to go down quite early in January, and I will live in Richmond for 2 months. Needless to say, if I'm wanted on the floor of the House of Delegates, I can't very well stop and do a radio show. So I'll do what I did last year. I'll take a hiatus, but not to worry. I have lots to say, and I guarantee you I will be back. So you can expect me back March or April next year. We'll figure out the exact day. It'll be posted on my website, marklevinetalk.com. I've been thinking about how to end the year. And like I said, for me, it's not just ending the year, but it's ending for a few months. And one of the callers commented, I think it was on the last show, that, you know, everything I say is so negative all the time. Well, it is. Let's face it. I'm quite concerned about the new president-elect. I'm very concerned about my country. I'm concerned about the Russians and how their influence got this guy elected. I'm concerned about corruption. I'm concerned about the Electoral College. I'm concerned about, well, everything this guy did. I won't repeat it here because that's not what this show is about. I don't want to be negative. I was thinking about how I could possibly end the show on a positive note, which is hard to do. And I came up with a theme. The theme of today's show is, thanks, Obama. Many have used that term seriously, but I, of course, they've used it sarcastically, I should say. I mean it seriously. I mean to say thanks to President Barack Obama. And I'm still stunned, I guess, by how short America's memory has been, how soon and easily we forget the good things our president has done. So I want to talk through that, and of course, always invite you to call in at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's start with the economy. Bill Clinton famously said, it's the economy, stupid. But it wasn't until really a few weeks ago when I read an op-ed by the conservative economist Robert Samuelson that I realized something. I realized that in the first year of the Bush recession, the economic indicators were worse than the first year of the Great Depression. Now, I don't usually like reading Samuelson. He is a conservative economist. As an economist, he's fair. He does tell the truth. But he, you know, has certainly a bias, lean. He's often attacking my good friends in the Democratic Party and supporting Republicans. But he doesn't hide the data. He's honest about that. I've always appreciated that. And he told me what I didn't realize. I knew the Bush recession of 2008 was terrible. I knew the stock market was collapsing. I knew the banks were in trouble. I knew there was a run on the banks. But I really hadn't thought about how bad it was, how much worse it was than 1929, 1930, the first year of the Great Depression. The stock market collapse was worse. The attacks on our bank solvency were worse. And General Motors, the classic American car company, had 2 weeks to live. when President Obama came to office. They had 2 weeks. They, not 2 months, not 2 years, but they would run out and the classic American car business was going to be shuttered. And I just don't think people remember what President Obama did. They don't remember Mitt Romney saying, let Detroit go bankrupt. They don't remember that the Republican Party stood with Romney in saying, well, if our cars can't compete with Japan and Germany and England and Korea, we guess we don't need car companies in America. Do the people of Michigan, did they remember that the Republicans wanted to end car making in America and the Democrats supported it? At the time of the Cash for Clunkers auto bailout, the mocking of that program, President Obama's program to save America's automobile industry, was so high that between two-thirds and three-quarters of Americans opposed a bailout for Detroit. But a bailout happened. President Obama did the right thing, not the political thing. And General Motors and Chrysler and Ford not only paid back the entire government loan with interest, but they are profitable companies today. This isn't a few hundred jobs at Carrier. This is a few hundred thousand jobs that were saved. Thanks, Obama. Speaking of hundreds of thousands of jobs, at the time that President Obama took office, we were losing 700,000 jobs a month. Now, that's a really high figure. It's pretty astonishing, so let's break it down. Let's do a little bit of math here. 700,000 divided by 30, well, let's see, that's about 23,000 jobs a day. Or, doing more math, about 1,000 jobs an hour. Every hour, day and night, 24/7, 1,000 jobs were lost. Now, some people are praising Donald Trump for paying millions of dollars to save less than 1,000 jobs. But under the last Republican rule, we were losing 1,000 jobs an hour. Talk about a drop in the bucket. President Obama at that time and the Democrats supported an economic stimulus plan. A major economic stimulus plan, $1 trillion in economic stimulus. And the Republicans were 150% opposed to it. They did not want a stimulus package. In fact, even before President Obama took office, when he was just President-elect Obama, the Democrats pleaded with then-President George W. Bush, saying, President Obama's going to do this. Here's your chance to, you know, put your thumbnail on it and maybe do it a way you want, but the country needs stimulus so badly that in November and December of 2008, before President Obama takes office, we need your help. Just do a stimulus package. George Bush said no. He was going to continue to let America slide into recession. He was going to let Obama do the trick. The interesting thing is that the prescription by the Republicans for the oncoming Great Depression, indeed I should say the Greater Depression, because as I said, the economic activity in the first year was worse than the Great Depression. Their prescription was a balanced budget. They gave the exact same ideas to the economy that Herbert Hoover gave in 1929 and 1930, 31, 32. Hoover also believed we should have a balanced budget even in the middle of economic collapse. It's not worth it to run a deficit, Hoover said. Well, the result was the first year of the Great Depression turned into the second year, the third year, and the fourth year. And by the time the American people threw out Herbert Hoover and elected Franklin Delano Roosevelt, unemployment was getting close to 25%. People were selling pencils in the streets. People in Wall Street were jumping out the windows. Here's the thing that, well, you don't need a degree in economics to understand, but it's certainly something that I understood. And people need to understand where I get my information. So I do have a degree in economics. I'm not trying to brag here, but I'm just letting you know that I know what I'm talking about. It's a magna cum laude degree from Harvard College. And even at Harvard, even among economics majors, about 12 of them did microeconomics as opposed to for every one of us that did macroeconomics. So microeconomics is the study of how businesses work. It's actually pretty easy, right? You get so much money in, so much money goes out. The difference is the profit. There's certain inputs, right? There's cost of goods, there's labor, there's tax, there's payments. You have to pay taxes, hopefully, unless you're Donald Trump. You've got advertising. It's actually not that hard to figure out how a business works. But macroeconomics, there's a reason why more than 90% of Harvard College undergraduates did not choose macroeconomics. They chose microeconomics. And yeah, I'm bragging a little, but micro is easy. Macroeconomics is the study of unemployment nationwide, worldwide, inflation, interest rates, currencies, how they affect how the change in the dollar or the euro or the yen affect the overall economy. It studies in the monetary supply and how the Federal Reserve can expand or contract the money supply by changing the interest rate and doing other things, and in so doing either cause the economy to grow or cause it to shrink. It's the impact of government spending and government tax cuts. And if it sounds really boring, I'm sorry. I loved it. I loved every bit of it. My professor was Martin Feldstein, Ronald Reagan's chief economist, actually, was my professor. And I just wanted to understand it, frankly. I thought it was really complex. And if I'm going to go to a really good school, I might as well make them teach me something really hard to understand. And I got it. I'll tell you who else has it. Janet Yellen, the Federal Reserve Chair, who I believe to be the single best Federal Reserve Chair in all of American history. In any case, I know macroeconomics, and let me give you some basic macroeconomic understandings, because it's important that you understand generally how the world economy works. At a time of depression, in a time of recession, there's unemployment. People are out of work. And the reason people are out of work is because there are not enough people buying the products they want. It's not that employers say, I'm going to fire someone. Bush is president. No. They actually liked Bush. No, the reason the cars were in trouble, the car manufacturing, was not because the cars were made dramatically different from before. It's because no one was buying cars. And people weren't buying cars because their housing prices were falling through the floor. And the housing prices were falling through the floor because Wall Street speculators had speculated so much on housing without any regulation by the federal government or state governments that everyone's housing prices went down. Everyone was afraid. When people are afraid, they don't buy a lot of toys at Christmas time. They don't go on a lot of vacations. They don't buy a new car. And it feeds on itself. And the process gets worse and worse and worse. And that's what happened in the Great Depression. And that's what started to happen in 2008 when the Bush recession began. Government spending in a time of massive unemployment and recession is exactly the cure. You don't have to ask me. Ask John Maynard Keynes, the great English economist who explained this in the 1930s, taught Franklin Delano Roosevelt the solution. Roosevelt used it through government spending like the New Deal and all kinds of government programs and brought us out of the Great Depression. Of course, the best way was actually World War II because government spends a lot of money on war, and that was actually when our deficit was the highest. But Republicans say that Democrats always like deficits. That is a lie. Now you're going to see that I am a fiscal conservative because at a time of full employment, which is where we are now, now would be the worst time to do a massive stimulus. But Republicans support stimulus now. Well, they support it now because they have the political power to use it to advantage their friends. I'll get back to how President Obama saved the economy and take your questions at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the aggressive progressive, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Title of today's show is Thanks, Obama. And I mean it sincerely, not sarcastically. First, I think it's very important for us all to understand a little bit of macroeconomics. I know our president-elect has no idea what he's doing, but you, the American people, his bosses, should know. So in a time of great unemployment, that is the time we really need government spending. And if it doesn't seem right to you, well, how does the government tax you and then spend, and how does that create any wealth? It actually does. And the reason is, well, first of all, they spend first and tax you later. That's why it's a deficit. But also it's because people are afraid in a recession to spend. And also they're taxing very rich people and giving money to ordinary people. And that really propels an economy. Because if a bunch of people have more money in their pockets, then guess what? You can afford that new car. And then you can go and buy that new car or that used car. And the money made there will encourage factories to then produce new cars. And then the factory job worker gets more money. And then he or she can go and spend money on toys for Christmas. And then the toy maker makes more toys. And it becomes a virtuous cycle. It works really well. And that's indeed how we got out of the Great Depression. And that's how President Obama got us out of this. It was both his fiscal policy, what the government was doing. It's also the monetary policy. Basically, Janet Yellen, Ben Bernanke, and then Janet Yellen increased the money supply, which lowers interest rates. And what that does is it says, hey, I can afford a new car or a house because the interest rates are down and I don't have to doesn't cost me very much to borrow. So I might as well get that new house and that new car. And then, you know, I have to put in all these new things in my house. I pay people for that. The other people feel richer as housing prices go up and they're willing to spend more money. It's a virtuous cycle. So why isn't government stimulus always a good thing? You just heard Mark Levine say it's a good thing. It helps make the economy grow. Everything's wonderful. Why is it okay if the new president does exactly what Obama did? Because there's a limit. The virtuous cycle works when people are unemployed. You make more things, people buy more things, you make more things, you have to hire more people to do it. There's slack in the economy. There are people sitting on the wayside waiting for jobs. You hire them, and that's great. That's the virtuous cycle. But when unemployment is low, thanks Obama, down to 4.6%, very low, what that does is the only way to get more people working is you raise their wages. And that's not a bad thing. Again, wage increases under President Obama have been greater in the last few months than any time in American history. That's a good thing. But eventually, the more there are no workers to be hired, and the more wages increase, that increases inflation. This exact thing happened, by the way, in the 1960s and 1970s. Lyndon Johnson didn't want to pay for the war in Vietnam because the war in Vietnam was controversial. So he put the war on the credit card. He went into debt. But we were already in full employment in the 1960s. So in spending that extra government spending, he just brought us massive inflation. And you may remember the entire decade to follow. The 1970s were terrible. We had high unemployment and high inflation. Poor Jimmy Carter, he didn't cause it. Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford did, but he had to suffer because of it. There's a lag in economic time. So President Obama did the right thing at the right time. I'm not so sure the next president will play. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Back up.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Got a full board, five callers wishing me goodbye. I appreciate that. I will get to your calls in just a second. I just want to finish making my argument. And I love that on progressive radio, people are willing to listen to a lecture in macroeconomics. I love that. I wish other Americans understood how important this is. People ask, how can the president affect the economy? And they don't really know. Oh, Trump's going to create jobs. Well, why would Trump create jobs? How would Trump create jobs? I don't know, but he's going to do it. Well, there are ways to do it. There are macroeconomic things that work, and there are things that don't work. There's a reason why the economy was great under Bill Clinton and under Barack Obama, and why it was terrible in the 70s. There's a reason. So, as I said, government stimulus, when there's unemployment, helps to stimulate the economy. It's exactly what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did in the 1930s. There's a time for deficits. The Bible tells us there's a time to spend and a time to save. And there is. And people are so forgetful. they think that, oh, Democrats want to spend, Republicans want lower deficits. That is so untrue. Completely untrue. Take a look at Ronald Reagan. Under Ronald Reagan's presidency, the deficit skyrocketed. Reagan spent far, far more than Jimmy Carter. And Bush Sr. spent far more than Ronald Reagan. And Bill Clinton cut the deficit so low it actually became a surplus. And then George Bush Jr. gave us the biggest deficit, well, since the Great Depression. But he didn't use it in the right way. He did it for tax cuts for the rich, which don't stimulate the economy. Well, why not, Mark? It's just money. Well, I'll tell you why. I want you to think about this. Again, this is basic economics, but not something that you ever see on CNN or MSNBC, and certainly not Fox. I want you to think about why giving money to middle-class people stimulates the economy and giving money to rich people doesn't. Think about this. Let's say you make $10 million a year, and we're going to double what you make because we're going to cut your taxes. Now you make $20 million a year. Are you going to spend it? Well, making $10 million a year, you already have all the golden toilet seats you could need or want. You already have all the various houses and properties you need or want, all the cars you need or want. Your kids already can go to school, any college with no problem at all. You already can do trips around the world. What are you going to use the money for? You know what you're going to do with the money? You're going to put in the bank. But you're not going to spend anymore. Take that same $10 million and give $10,000 to 1,000 middle class or working class people or poor people. Are they going to spend the money? In a New York minute. Why? Why would they spend the money? Because they have needs. They got to pay the rent. Their kids want to go to college. They want to buy more toys at Christmas. They need that new car because they have one car and it's a two-job family. They need the money. They spend the money. Economists refer to this as the marginal propensity to consume. That's a fancy title. All it means is that poor people spend money. Save the auto industry. Thanks, Obama. You gave tens of millions of Americans health care. The smallest percentage uninsured in American history. And you cut the rate of growth of health care by a ton. It's still going up. Because, remember, we couldn't have a public option because the Republicans filibustered that. And remember why. The reason they didn't want government provide health care as an option, not as mandatory, is because they said the government does so much of a better job in providing good health care at low cost, it will crowd out all the private insurers. And we don't want all the private insurers to lose their businesses. We don't want people to have cheaper health care because that will harm the people that, well, pay us campaign donations. You want to know why Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, didn't go as far as it could? Well, one is Republicans not agreeing to the public option. The other was the United States Supreme Court, in a decision that was completely lawless and had zero basis in the Constitution, said the states cannot be required by the federal government to do Medicaid expansion. But the federal government required them to do Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. Here's how the government does it. The federal government says you don't have to do it, states, but if you don't, your people don't get any of the benefits. So everyone did it. They did the exact same thing with the Affordable Care Act, and Supreme Court said, nope, you can't do that. Can't coerce the states through federal funds? Have they met Ronald Reagan? Ronald Reagan said that highway funds would be dependent on everyone raising their drinking age to 21. And I was 18 at the time, and I didn't like it one bit. But if that was constitutional, certainly the Affordable Care Act is. The irony is whatever did not go well in the Obama years, I can pinpoint it to a decision of the Republican Congress or the Republican Supreme Court. Thanks, Obama. You didn't manage to make the Republicans irrelevant. And that, I'm afraid, is the worst part of your legacy. All right, lots and lots and lots of callers. I'm going to get to as many of you as I can. 888-488-MARK, although the lines may be full now. 888-488-6275. James, line 2 in Arizona. Go ahead, James.
Okay, yeah. You was talking about the economics.
Yeah.
Carrier was going to put in these robots to make air conditioners.
That's right.
Well, good luck with that robot buying a house so you can put those air conditioners in.
That's right. Automation kills jobs. The problem with the unemployment we have right now is what's called structural unemployment. Unemployment during a recession is called cyclical unemployment. It goes up and down depending on economic times. But we have structural unemployment. We have people in manufacturing jobs that need to learn engineering. They need to learn about computers. They don't want to learn a new trade any more than the guy that made the horseshoes for the horses wanted to learn a new trade when horseless carriages, otherwise known as cars, came in style. But you're absolutely right. Carriers putting in the robots, at the end of the day, it won't save any jobs.
Okay. About the same token, that's this guy that owns Carl's Jr., and Hardee's.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, you're go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're in a lot of truck stops, and now they're talking about having driverless trucks. Well, good luck. They might be able to sell gas to their truck, but without that truck, that computer that's driving that truck is not going to go in there and buy one of those Carl Jr.
You're right.
Sandwiches
and
or
you're absolutely
sandwich.
Right. And I'll tell you something else. I mean, there used to be gas station attendants, right? 40 years ago, they would fill your gas, and now everyone does it automatically through the – so you're right. Automation does harm jobs. Now, what it does do is it makes everyone more efficient. So in the long run, your products are cheaper, and I think as long as the people who lose those jobs that machines do learn new and complex jobs, learn service jobs, learn or do jobs like, you know, whether it's a massage therapist or a waiter in a restaurant or someone in a store. I mean, there are jobs that cannot be automated. But, yeah, people have to learn new jobs. And one of the things I find happens in rural communities is people don't want to learn new jobs. They take pride. They did it. They went into the coal mines. It's a dirty, dangerous business. And they want those jobs. And now the coal companies are blowing up the mountains, which I'm opposed to for environmental reasons as well as for losing jobs. But they want their old jobs back. But they're blaming the wrong people. They need to blame those coal companies, and they need to learn new jobs. That's why I want internet, for example, in rural areas so that people can learn because the computers are the future and coal is the past. And I think you're absolutely right, James. Automation is changing America. Technology will always be on the march, and the trick is to stay ahead of it by teaching Americans jobs that are for the 21st century and not jobs for the 20th century. And that's structural unemployment. Thanks.
You don't have just another 15 seconds?
Yeah.
Trump, he's a good con man.
Yes,
he got
is.
Up in front of those coal miners with this hard hat on, with this shovel, and said he's going to save all. And then he made these shovel motions like, well, you don't mine coal
with a shovel. You sure don't. You don't. And now he's put in place all these people that are going to be all about Goldman Sachs and all about, you know, making Wall Street rich and will harm the very people who elected him. And I hope they see it. I hope they're willing to put their racism aside. Those that voted for economic reasons should open their eyes and see what the next 4 years are going to bring. Thank you, James, for your call. Let me go to Richard in Albuquerque on line 5. Hey, Richard, how are you?
Oh, thanks for taking my call,
sure.
Mark. I'm going to miss you, but
thank
fight
you.
The good fight.
I keep going.
Anyway, I wanted to talk about the Democratic Party. Needs a team of spokespersons, somebody like Wiener, you know, he's a bombastic kind of guy, you know, not to say that I approve of what he's done.
How about me, Richard?
Somebody
how about me?
Very outspoken.
How do I do?
I'm sorry?
How will I do? I'm auditioning for the job. What do you think?
Oh, I think you're doing an excellent job. That's what
okay.
I was calling.
So, well, no, well, tell your people, your Democratic people, tell them to use me. Listen, I'd love to get more radio stations. I'd love to get on more. I do TV about once every week or two. I'd love more. I agree. I think Democrats need to fight back and need to tell it like it is and even need to get a little wonky sometimes. You know, I'm explaining macroeconomics. You find me a single person on radio or TV that's actually doing that. But it's essential, not that you understand all the details, but people need to understand what makes economies work. They need to understand why President Obama was successful and why the next president is unlikely to be. So,
right. And you know, like in 2008 is when I retired from my work. And I I had some hard times there during that period, and I almost lost my house.
Yeah,
and
it's tough times.
It wasn't until through the HARP program, the H-A-R-P program.
That's right.
Actually, I almost lost my home, and if it hadn't been for that program that President Obama had instituted, I would have been out on the street.
So repeat after me, Richard. Thanks, sure. Obama.
Thanks, Obama.
See, thank people need so to much. Know that. They need to know that. President Obama saved your house and your job. And and the Democrats did. And so, you know, I'm amazed that this wasn't the issue of the campaign. Everything else was discussed, but economics, the most important issue, it really was barely touched.
Yeah, I know. I was hoping that the Democratic Party would have pointed the finger at the Republicans for have gotten us into the
mess. I agree.
I agree.
I did it. I did it in 2009. I did it in 2010. I've done it really for the last 8 years. And I can pinpoint it. It isn't just like, oh, Republicans got into this. I can tell you specific proposals. I can tell you they opposed the stimulus. They opposed the auto bailout. They opposed loose monetary policy. Republicans supported exactly the same policies that Herbert Hoover did. And we see how well Herbert Hoover did. Only there's a difference. Hoover did not understand economics. It was still a new science at the time. I actually think Hoover is far more blameless than the current Republican Party, because the current Republican Party should know better. Thanks for your call, Richard. I appreciate
it. Yeah, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Let's go to Russell in Weaverville, North Carolina. Hey, Russell, line four.
Hey, buddy. I'm going to miss you. I got two things. I was wanting to tell you. There's a company in your state,
Virginia.
And they do American-made stuff,
uh-huh.
And I don't know if you've ever heard of them or not. They're called Owl Navco in Belhaven, Virginia.
Okay, not sure, but go ahead.
And they do World War II scale models and stuff.
Okay,
they're made in the USA. Mm-hmm. But the other question I have, well, the question I got for you is. Why is it a corporation has to control an employee's 401k and an employee can't decide on their own stock options?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I think that can go way too far. I do think that they should offer something like a basic index fund, a chance for you to just invest in the market in general. There is a reason why that you don't want employees to put all their retirement in, say, one stock. For example, a lot of people did that in Enron and lost everything. So I think that it's okay to say don't put all your money in one stock. You need diversification. But I also think that employers can have way too much power over this. And at the end of the day, in your IRA, for example, you can invest that however you want. So I think that people should have a right to have pretty wide investment, but I understand saying you can't say put it all in one stock, because I think that's dangerous for no matter how good the stock is, you know, they go up and down. And I think to not have diversification is a problem. Stay on with me, Russell, if you like. I do have to take a break, and I also want to take some more calls after Russell at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My last 4 minutes of 2016. We're going to go really quickly through the callers. Ismael in line one in Virginia. How you doing, sir?
Mark, thanks for taking my call real quick, and I'll take my answer off the phone. How about you being a chairman of the DNC? I hope you don't mind me. I'm going to write a letter to them. I'm serious. We can use you there.
Yeah, write them a letter. If nominated, I will serve. I think it's a little early for me. I think I got to get a little bit higher up in the hierarchy. But, boy, that's a job I'd love.
That'd be
great.
You got yourself a deal. Thank you. Happy
thank you as well. Appreciate it. Ellen in Albuquerque, line two. How are you, Ellen?
Hi, I'm doing great. Hey, Mark, I just wanted to say thanks, Obama. I was reading an article in the Washington Times. It talks about how Obama got to name 340 judges over his tenure and how he's managed to change 13 of the key federal appeals courts to Democratic rule when he first took power in 2009. there was only one of the circuit courts.
No question.
That had majority Democrats.
President Obama's judicial appointments are another reason to be thankful for President Obama. No question. I do fear the future, but for now, we're okay. And those judicial appointments are largely going to keep the next president in line if he tries to be totalitarian, as he has seemingly a penchant to do. So those judges are crucial to protecting our democracy. Thank you, Ellen, for bringing that out. All right. We've got, let's bring in Reggie. Reggie is Old Faithful, almost as faithful as Old Faithful. Reggie from Georgia, line one. How are you, sir? Oh, all right, let's go. Oh, Russell's still there. I'm sorry. Russell, line four. I didn't let you finish. Go ahead, Russell. You can end the show. Go ahead.
I was just wanting to tell you about that. Thank you for telling me about the 401k. I appreciate what you do.
Sure.
If you get a chance, check out that company up there in your state, AllNavco.
Okay. I'll check it out.
They're in Belhaven, Virginia. They do models of World War II ships and stuff.
All right. I'll check it out. Thank you, Russell. And I do have Reggie back, so let's let Reggie end the show. Reggie, you got the last word. Go ahead.
Well, how do we vote out these Republicans in the Congress?
One step at a time. We start in 2017 in Virginia and North Carolina and New Jersey, and we work in the state houses. And then in 2018, we do more state houses. The trick is in the states, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a Virginia state delegate. If we elect good state representatives, and if you don't know who your state representative is, learn. Know who your state senator is. Know who your state delegate, your state representative is. We elect them. They ungerrymander the states. And then we can ungerrymander Congress and finally take over Congress and finally win back America. It's not going to happen in a year. But the first year it's going to happen is next year, November 2017. Thank you, Reggie, for your call. Sorry I didn't get more time with all the other callers. As President Obama is about to conclude his legacy, let's all say together, thanks, Obama. This is Mark Levine signing off. Talk to you next year.